Round one, fight!
Hi everyone, this is episode 8 of Don't Be a Scrub podcast. My name is Spider Carnage, aka Verbose Mute on Xbox Live, and my interviewing partner is Mutton, aka MuttonHead01 on PSN. We're going to be doing a bit of an intro for episode 8. So, these past couple of... we've been away for a little while, after the big Shadowy Showdown 3 big interviews, and we're continuing with that today with Mr. Scarlato. Yeah, so Mutton, we've had a few weeks off, so what have you been up to, and, you know...
What have I been up to? I have been... haven't been doing that much, being a bum, typing up all the transcripts. Watching West Coast Warzone. How do you find West Coast Warzone?
West Coast Warzone was really good. I really enjoyed it. Actually, for the first big tournament of the year, I was actually really impressed, and it was quite fun. Yeah. Although I would say that the team, double elimination team tournament, oh, it takes too fucking long. Way too long, man. They were playing that team thing forever. Yeah. Although I was really surprised at singles as well. I mean, two Abels and Ricky Ortiz.
Yeah, I'm really happy to see Juicebox get top three.
Yeah, top three.
Because I'm a big fan of Juicebox and his podcast. Shout out to your podcast. When is it coming back?
Yeah. He's been doing a lot of Yang stuff. Yang and Yun, I think, as well.
Oh, yeah.
The other thing, I mean, there was a couple of good highlights. JS Master, the infamous finger from...
from Filipino champ.
Yeah.
Yep. Doing what he does best.
Yeah, although I must really say that Chirithi, really impressed with his Chun Li.
Yeah.
Really good Chun Li.
And I really like Eric Hai's Ryu as well. I think Team Canada really put on a show, even though they didn't place. Did anyone place from Team Canada?
No, I don't think so.
But they all did really well on
Oh, Air, I mean, we're counting.
Air. Is Air Canadian?
Well, he said that it was basically when he was doing some of the commentary on the stream, he said that it was from Canada, so I think he's more Canadian now.
He's Canadian / Hong Kong / Japanese.
Yeah.
Well, shout out to Air, the last Ryu standing.
I think there's quite a few. I mean, Takeda's been putting up a fair bit of Ryu footage as well, so...
I'm just joking. But.
Yeah, I mean, that, and... what, in the next couple of weeks, Street Fighter scene in Australia seems to have been kicking off again. Chris's Clubhouse is back on.
The scene in Melbourne has changed quite a lot with the release of Arcade Edition.
Yeah, exactly. The last Chris's Clubhouse still had a fairly good turnout, which was good.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure this week, or the next one, I should have said.
This week should be pretty good.
Yeah, this should be pretty good. So, that's always good. And then the Sydney Good Game Tournament seemed to have started up again from what I read in IRC. So we had a few things on, which was good. It's been quite interesting. It's also good to take some time off after Shadowy Showdown. I mean, it was quite busy, so... and I think now we all basically have to start planning for OHN and EVO.
I have to say that I finally understand why after major tournaments I always want to see the videos right away. I want to see the recaps right away. But I finally understand, like, after a tournament, like, you're just so tired that you can't do anything else, just want to sleep, man.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So what was your favorite part of West Coast Warzone?
Well, I think my favorite would definitely be the Marvel vs. Capcom 2 money match.
Neo vs. Clockwork.
Yeah, definitely. That was, I mean, I can't play Marvel for shit.
Yeah.
But I really just enjoy watching high level Marvel play.
I enjoyed it too, even though I don't know anything about Marvel.
I know the general basics and the strategy and whatnot, but I can't play the game. I just don't have the execution or the reflexes for it.
Yeah.
But watching that was just absolutely insane. By the way, also shout outs to iPlayWinner for the stream. Okay, you know, it's actually far beyond their control. There was nothing they could do about it, but they've been copying a fair bit of shit for it. I think people just need to really back off from that perspective.
Yeah.
It's really beyond their control. I mean, I've watched almost every other iPlayWinner stream, and it's always been high quality.
Yeah, it's always been really good.
So, yeah, one of the things we had in our community, we had an announcement a few weeks back.
Yep.
The first player ever to be sponsored in Australia, Toxie.
Not the first player,
first Super Street Fighter 4 player.
To be sponsored,
in Australia.
Toxie, by Traveling Circus, same guys who sponsored Takedo.
Yeah, and Takedo also gave him a shout out and congratulated him and welcomed him to the team on his blog, which is good.
yeah, it's great news for Australia that, you know, like someone, one of us are finally sponsored by it.
Mm. Looking forward to actually him traveling a lot more overseas and see how much he's going to level up his game by actually playing all the US players, because I think he's just probably, I mean, he was already good in the US at last Evo. He beat Shizzo and he did fairly well in money matches.
Yeah.
But I think if he gets to play there a lot more consistently, he'll and he's over there a lot more, he'll even go in further. Which then basically we can all just wave bye-bye to Toxic, because we'll never be able to catch up to him.
Maybe Toxic will move to SoCal just like Justin Wong.
Oh, yeah,
he'll live in Man's house and James Chen's house. And he'll become a Kobe fan. Fuck Kobe.
I love your Lakers hatred.
But so Spider, will you buy a Toxic t-shirt?
I've been thinking about it actually. I don't know why, I already have enough t-shirts as it is.
Well, if they had Toxic underwear, I'd buy some. You know, I mean, Dave does good work. I would say that Dave is like the most famous guy from Australia in the Street Fighter scene right now. Boss Logic.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. No, that's the only one of these designs that. Hell, I use his Marvel vs. Capcom 3 Dormammu as my fucking Windows background.
Really?
Wallpaper. Yeah.
Dormammu.
Yeah.
Oh, I would have picked a chick, but.
Nah, I got enough of that. No, I love that Dormammu thing, dude. It's so good.
Ah. Good. Okay. Okay. Toxic put out underwear series, you know, a singlet, a boxers, I'll wear that shit, you know, with a Toxic sign over the front, my crotch area.
Yeah, I probably will actually get one eventually, I don't know, money's tight.
It's kind of sad because like I buy a shirt from like every event I go to, like BAM, Shadow, but I can't wear them because I hope my girlfriend will slap me silly if I wear a Street Fighter shirt.
Who cares?
So, yo, next topic, what are we talking about? I think that's probably it, right?
Yeah, I mean, Toxic sponsorship was pretty big.
Yeah.
I'm really glad he got it.
Congratulations.
It's really important. Well, I mean, I'm hoping he gets to travel a lot more.
Yeah.
And I think he'll learn a lot more if he does get to travel.
Yeah.
And with that, with the traveling a lot more, I think we'll also come a lot better exposure of the Australian scene as well.
Yeah.
Which I think will be good.
Yeah.
And from that, we're also gonna get, how can I put it? He can also bring back, like, he can bring back some of the knowledge which he's earned over there and can apply it down here.
And we should also, like, you know, give props to Shadaloo for, like, helping.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. In the getting the deal set up as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I think that's just about gonna wrap it up. So we basically did an interview with, this interview was taken at Shadaloo Showdown on day one, the end of the day, and we interviewed our New Zealand guest, Scarlator.
Yep.
So we hope you enjoyed the interview, and that'll be that. Alright, hello everyone, we're just day one, end of Shadaloo Showdown, it's sometime in the evening, and I'm here with one of our international guests, I guess. He's a New Zealander. Are you the only New Zealander here?
There was one other. He was a third striker. I'm the only New Zealander for Super Street Fighter 4.
Okay, cool. And it's Mr. Skeletor. Is that a friend of mine?
Skeletor,
sorry.
No. Thomas, Tom, Skull, Skeletor, Skullinator, whatever works. Whatever works.
The dude with the skull in his name.
Yeah, you got it.
All right, cool. Well, as always, we don't break any traditions in this podcast. So how did you get into Street Fighter or fighting games?
How did I get into Street Fighter or fighting games? All right, well, to be truthful, I guess I am the new school in a sense that I was casual with a lot of games such as, you know, Third Strike, Marvel vs. Capcom 1, then 2. I was spectating online streams, you know, interesting streams for those sorts of games for a very long time, but I never took them seriously, you know, like I was very casual in a sense that I just wasn't very skilled. But then come vanilla Street Fighter 4 Japanese arcade release, I was so hyped, you know, for a new fighting game to just begin when, you know, I was at a good age. So immediately, as soon as it became possible online, you know, I was watching all the vanilla arcade streams and, you know, all the previews, of course, before it was actually released and stuff. So I was getting hyped for that game before it was even available to me. And then as soon as, you know, the the Japanese players start putting out amazing videos. You know, you already have your favorite characters in your head mm-hmm. before you even own a copy of the game or your country even has it on arcade. So, yeah, come Street Fighter 4. I guess that was it for me, in a sense that as soon as I bought that game, I already knew I was going to play it for the 20 years that, say, Super Turbo has already proved itself. Because you can tell that Street Fighter 4 is going to be a worthwhile time sink, so to speak, you know?
Yeah, definitely. It seems to be like it's... To me, it seems like it's the new Super Turbo, almost to a point where I think the game will live for quite a long time.
They're doing such a good job of it as well, them being Capcom, you know, like taking definitely. On board all the changes. You can just tell that they're building it to last, so to speak.
Because Street Fighter 4, you said it was going to last for like 20 years, or you think it will last for another 20 years. Do you think like games like Street Fighter X Tekken will overshadow it as the main game that's played on the stream, or the main event game?
I guess that is quite a concern of mine, just in the sense that I am the guy who plays one fighting game, you know, I'm not great at switching it up. But I guess there's two layers to that question, in a sense, like, am I hyped for those games? Sure I am, you know, like, Chun's going to be in Street Fighter vs. Tekken, you know, two flavours of that game, I don't know, but...
And MVC 3 as well.
And MVC 3, sure, and that's, you know, a TBC clone and all these sorts of things, and... I am hyped for these games, you know. I really want to see the good in them, but at the core of that question is, do I think it's good? No. I mean, I really, really want to see Super as the main game for quite a while. I think that's still entirely possible with these games coming through, in a sense that it's fundamentally built so well. But I do get a little worried about these companies pushing out this amount of games, you know. There's a lot of money that goes into that sort of process, and then I question the success of some of them, you know. Like, let's say one flavor of Street Fighter Tekken doesn't go so well. This is if Namco and Capcom are still pushing out their own ones. I think that would be such a shame, in a sense that, you know, that company would then be salty about how that game went, you know, and they'd take offense, and then they wouldn't make any more fighting games, you know. So, like, I love it, you know, I love it, and I really hope they do well, but who knows really how that's all going to end up.
That is something that I was actually thinking about. I mean, there is always potential for oversaturation in the market. I mean, fighting games in general now are becoming really, really popular, but not just fighting games alone, it's also video games are becoming quite hot. And when I was speaking with Takeda a few days ago, he basically said the same thing, that video games are really in and becoming more part of the pop culture, and just in general culture, thanks to Nintendo Wii and a few of the other mainstream Flash games. Farmville's huge.
It's becoming more casual.
It's becoming a lot more casual, yes. And when things usually become casual, companies usually tend to print games out. Like, absolutely. The Guitar Hero series, to me, is one of those series where Guitar Hero 1 and 2, especially Guitar Hero 2, was the one that really broke the mold.
Yep.
Guitar Hero 3 was huge. And then how many Guitar Hero games have they produced in the last 2 years?
It's interesting you should bring that up. Sure, they're flooding Guitar Hero, you know, like, absolutely agree. And I mean, just in general terms, the casual thing, I'm a strong non-fan, let's say, of the whole casual dumbing down thing, you know. GoldenEye, best FPS, Modern Warfare 2, what is this, you know? So, I definitely see what you're saying with that. But just funny you should bring up Guitar Hero, in a sense that it's a WCG game.
Yes,
and New Zealand has Mason, who is an Akuma player in their scene, and he is, like, you know, top 8 USA WCG and sort of first place Oceania in their WCG 2009 sort of thing. So he said to me, you know, Guitar Hero 3, huge, just like you said, it was like the tournament standard, so to speak, and then a lot came after it and it was just garbage or something like that. I don't know the reasons why, but then he's great.
Because they got a lot easier.
They got a lot easier?
Yes, believe it or not. Hard was not hard anymore. Hard was like medium. And then you had like expert, and then you had the expert plus, I believe. So
there's definitely one way to kill your hardcore player base, audience, I suppose.
Exactly. So to bring this back to fighting games, like, we have now, next year, we have a lineup of Marvel vs. Capcom 3, Tekken Tag 2, MK9, and if we want these games, like, because not Street Fighter, but fighting games in general are fairly hard to get into, and I think they should have a longer lifespan so people can actually discover everything.
Absolutely.
I don't think you can just, you know, churn out a new game. This isn't Call of Duty Black Ops, for example, or a new Call of Duty games every 6 to you know, 6 months to a year.
Yeah.
And it's, yeah, it's one of those sort of things where I'd like to have, you know, two or three solid games.
Yeah.
Or at least have revisions to those games. Absolutely. Maybe Capcom did get it right by having, you know, releasing Vanilla, then a year and a bit later, Super.
Bit of a beta test.
Yeah, it's like a beta test, and they're sort of, you know, just tweaking things a little. They added a few more characters, you know, and now Arcade Edition, I think, might be the definitive version.
Hope so.
I'm hoping it's the definitive version. Then again, from what I've seen is, remember, we had, like, World Warrior, Champion Edition, Turbo.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was the big one.
Yeah.
Super.
Yeah.
We had Super Turbo. And I think actually with Super Turbo there was two versions, like Grandmaster's Challenge and actually ST. Now I know Grandmaster's Challenge was, well, Street Fighter 2 X was in Japan.
Yeah.
But it seems to me like that they always go in threes.
Yeah. You know, absolutely.
Which was because we had like X-Men versus Street Fighter, Marvel Superheroes versus Street Fighter, Marvel vs. Capcom 1.
Yep.
And on the fourth one they got Marvel vs. Capcom 2.
Yeah.
They changed a few bits, but you know, Marvel vs. Capcom 1 was also very highly played.
Yeah.
So it seems to me like they go three or fours to sort of get the right balance between a type of game, and then
good things take time. So
yeah, exactly. They refine the process. You main Chun in Vanilla and Super Street Fighter 4.
Yeah, Chun's the only one I've ever picked and taken seriously.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about Chun? Why you picked Chun?
Sure.
Because she wasn't top tier in Vanilla. So.
She certainly wasn't top tier in Vanilla. No. What it was. When I was looking at these streams, you know, the first Chun to have any significance in the streaming world was Nuki, Onuki, obvious Chun hero from many games before, but obviously Third Strike. Very successful Chun player in many other games. So I saw a lot of Onuki stuff among other greats, you know, other good players who were good enough to be on the sorts of streams before the game had even hit console, you know. Seeing them and seeing what they were doing, I was pretty much just assessing which characters I liked the look of, you know. And then what it was for me was I saw, well, I had a basic understanding of charge motion and quarter circle forward before that sort of thing, right? So what did it for me was seeing Onuki land his first dash Hosenka or dash Ultra 1 on a stream, and this was before the game had even been console released, and that to me was just unreal in a sense that he'd developed. It was the first person to get Dash Ultra in any of those sorts of characters, right? It just showed that his level of skill, you know, the skill cap with Chun-Li was so high in a sense that people were developing things due to charge leniency and, you know, dash timing and all that sort of stuff. I really liked the skill cap that Nuki presented with, you know, things like Dash Ultras and stuff. So I went straight for Chun as soon as she became available with New Zealand's Vanilla Arcade release, which I think was about 1 month before Crown Melbourne bought Vanilla Arcade into the country. That was at Yifan's Arcade in Auckland. Great arcade, great scene. And I mean, from there, man, playing there and playing on console release and just one character, you know, I think it's that mentality of there are so many characters in the game and the game changes depending on who you fight. Fundamentally, you're playing a different game based on who your opponent picks.
Definitely.
The matchups, to me, are what governs the game. So I've always thought from that point on, when I just chun, every single game chun, from that point on, I've sort of second-guessed ever picking another character or even messing with another character in a sense that I knew my spacing would be off, my timing would break, links would be more difficult to land if I ever jumped back to Chun, you know, or I'd do a stupid Ryu DP mash during a block string when I should have just been sitting there, you know. So I think, to me, it was just play one character, and then do well with that one character, you know. So it was easy for me to get to Chun, and then sticking with her just, I don't know, it seemed normal to me in a sense that that's all I wanted to do.
So what do you think of the school where people say, like Justin Wong, for example, says that to be able to understand the game better, you need to understand how certain characters play. So he sort of plays certain characters to learn, or sort of should I say, he learns new characters, sort of understand how to beat them with his main character.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. Yeah, you got to wholeheartedly agree with the knowledge of other characters is so important, you know, because the other character's moveset governs spacing, right?
Definitely.
How you play against Adon is very different to how you play against Boxer, you know? Headbutt and Ground Jaguar, very different moves. So your normals as well all have priorities. Mm. It's important for you to know which normal will stuff which special for every character. Mm. In a sense, they could do that move. You have to be thinking, because you should know your character off by heart eventually. Of course, you can't get there straight away. But you should know your character off by heart, and you should know which normal will stuff which special from the opponent. Or, you know, maybe you can't stuff it, you have to backdash.
Yeah.
It's important to know that sort of stuff, and Justin is right in saying that, sure, you do need to have that basic knowledge of all characters, you know. I'm not sure about playing them all, just in a sense that a game with one-frame links, I'm not sure everyone can manage to know everyone's one-frame links, but that's another level completely, you know, so I definitely agree with what he was saying in that sense.
Okay. So that's interesting. Okay. So let's just change up a little bit. So why don't you tell us a little bit about the New Zealand scene, you know, the players, the areas, do you have rivalries?
Well, before I say anything at all on the New Zealand scene, I got to start by saying I love it to bits, you know.
Okay.
If it wasn't for the New Zealand scene, I would never have made it to my first tournament, you know. If it wasn't for making it to my first tournament, I wouldn't be here with you today in Melbourne, Australia, you know. So I love it to bits, I love it to pieces, but it is very small. And with a small community comes an awful lot of problems and challenges, which I see the Australian scene has already overcome. The main problem being, I guess, the division of the player base. So we've got Auckland, which is the main scene, and that's the main Super Street Fighter 4 scene as well. Auckland has a lot of arcades and a lot of people, and it's very close together. It's a great city and CBD area, similar to Melbourne with its outskirts, you know, like Manukau and all these other sorts of outer areas, the suburbs, which are very close to the CBD. So that makes a fighting game infrastructure, in my opinion, in a sense that all these people who are, you know, best in their neighborhood or whatever can just drive to CBD, go to the arcades, or come to the Rambats, these sorts of things. So I think that's one part of New Zealand which is strong, is the Auckland scene. Then, unfortunately, we have places like Wellington, which are just amazing cities, you know. It's a student city in a sense that Wellington is a great place to live, you know. There's so much fun, so much happening. And they have one arcade alone, and that arcade does not have Vanilla Street Fighter 4. It didn't for the longest time, and now it has one of those knockoff cabs, which you push start and it doesn't skip the animation. You know, it's got Cammy in it. It's an obvious PC rip sitting in an arcade cab. So it gives people the wrong impression, but also they can't play Vanilla in a sense that it's not the real thing. Not the genuine article at all. So they've got Third Strike cabinets in that arcade. So what that's done to it all is Wellington's favourite game, and the small scene Wellington has, is built around Third Strike. So interestingly enough, there was one other New Zealander here today, and he was only here to spectate and support Third Strike. He played Third Strike as well. His name was Moose Ben, and he was also here today, coincidentally, in Melbourne. So he found out about this event, he's like, oh man, I gotta go.
Yeah, definitely.
So that's the Wellington scene. And just in recent times as well, we've had the Christchurch scene develop from a guy called Captain Munter, who is the director of Three Green Bars.
By the way, shout out to Three Green Bars.
It's awesome. We love it.
Oh, I love it. I love watching it. Just to see that we have somebody like that actually going out there and doing these sorts of things from our corner of the world.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting in the sense that, you know, it's always been there, but no one's been filming these obscure communities, let's say.
Yeah, exactly.
It's really interesting to see, because it's all our hobbies. Shout-outs to Mark. So he has pretty much single-handedly created his own Christchurch scene. He used to come up to Auckland, so let's say 2009 Nationals, he would fly up to Auckland, and that'd be his only Street Fighter, you know? But in a small space of time, he, on the forums, made topics, got people together, you know, found out whoever had any minor interest in Street Fighter, and then invited them to mashups at his house. So he set up events, got people together, and it's just grown and grown, you know, because they did have an arcade down there with the PC knockoff cabs or whatever, but there was no hardcore, it was only casual. So what he's done is he's capitalized on any casual he could find and just escalated it to hardcore, in a sense that, you know, 1 year gone, Christchurch has just got Rambats. Unfortunately, very separate Rambats to Auckland, because, you know, it's different islands, so to speak.
Yeah.
But yeah, but they've just got their own Rambat series, and I mean, you can't be more proud because he's combining Christchurch with Dunedin, another neighbouring city. It's a long drive, but they'll get together once every 2-4 weeks and have a shared Rambat. So South Island is now covered in the Street Fighter 4 area, you know, and so I guess that's a small rundown of how the scene is divided in New Zealand. And I mean, the division brings problems, and it brings all the sorts of same drama that you'd see here with, you know, Melbourne-Sydney rivalries and all that. And the rivalries are good, you know, on certain levels, but they can also be detrimental in others, you know. And I mean, ultimately, when you have a small community, the goal is to grow, you know.
Yeah,
and sometimes the drama can be taken at face value. There might be a backstory, but if it's only seen on a forum, you know, like text only,
yeah,
it's really a detriment to whoever may be viewing, you know, registered or not. So yeah, we just want to grow, and I mean, we are, so you got to look forward to what is to come, you know.
So does New Zealand have like a toxic human bomb rivalry with, from player perspective?
Interestingly enough, no, we don't. We don't have a conflicting number one and number two player. I mean, we've got Simon Fish Abel and Devilstar 99 Zangief. Those two guys are like brothers in a sense that they play each other all the time within the arcade, and they're good friends, and it's interesting for them because, you know, they're long-time arcade players. Our number one player, coincidentally, doesn't even have console and the game, you know, vanilla or super. He's a long-term King of Fighter, I assume, player for many, many, many years, and then comes to Street Fighter and just translates it all, you know, in a sense that he's taking the same skill set and just reapplying it over here. So those two are close and similar in that sense. And the thing is, within the top eight of New Zealand, you know, the majority of them love each other in a sense that it's thanks to the seven other players that they could get to where they are with their matchup knowledge and whatnot. Sure, it's different with the internet and stuff now, but you really need to be playing on top of downloading, so... Yeah, we don't really have a main rivalry like that, but there is, you know, bitterness amongst the cliques, let's say. And, yeah, pros and cons, I suppose.
Okay. So, because you main Chun-Li, what would you say is Chun's hardest matchup?
Well, let's say with right now in Super, Chun's hardest matchup, on the whole, she has a couple of 6-4s, no doubt. Unfortunately, they are quite viable tournament picks as well.
Yep.
So let's say Viper, let's say Goki. I would say definitively Chun's hardest matchup is Akuma or Goki, in a sense that it's very hard to read the Akuma player, but you need to be constantly looking at the Akuma player, his spacing, his timing of his vortex options, because there are so many, and all of Chun-Li's options can be stuffed and broken and gimmicked. There is no surefire option for Chun sitting within Akuma or Goki's vortex that will just cure every situation. I've got it down to one thing which I can attempt. Every single, let's say, light kick demon flip on non-quick recover. However, it is a hold up for 2 frames and then option select a move during that 2-frame, just in case he hit the high, you know. So there's a lot of guesswork involved in something like that, and it's not easy to do 100% to begin with. So that level of thought, it's really difficult. But that is still my favorite matchup in the game, is Chun versus Akuma, because the level of thought that's required from both players, I might add, is immense. Because the Akuma also has to be smart, you know, for his options to beat spinning glued kick EX. So I really, really enjoy that matchup, but I would say that is definitively Chun's hardest matchup.
So what would you say is your most hated matchup?
My most hated matchup? Well, that's temperamental.
Okay,
so right now, my most hated matchup would be Adon, because I just got pieced out by Ace, one of Australia's 2 Adon mainers, I assume. Yeah, so I just lost.
Shout outs to Ace. We play a fair bit on Xbox Live.
Shout outs to Ace. I'm still salty, bro. No, just kidding. But no, that was a great match. But personally, I don't really have a matchup that I hate, you know. But right now, it's Adon, because I wasn't ready for the different quick recover speed, you know, the wake up speed. and I just don't get to play a lot of good add-ons in my community. So he beat me the first three rounds, I beat him the next three rounds, and then the final round it came down to, you know, one throw damage each, and in the reset I guessed wrong, so it was a great match, but I need some more add-on practice. So at the moment, add-on is my least favorite matchup, but hey, I look forward to my sets with Game V in a sense that, you know, that'll be all the learning I need. So just after that, I'm not going to dislike the add-on matchup anymore, I assume.
So what do you think of Chun's changes in Arcade Edition?
I'm a big fan of them in a sense that I didn't like a lot of the free things that Chun was given in Super. See, it's my opinion that Ultra 2 is a scrubby Ultra in a sense that I really liked the character-specific juggles on Ultra 1 in the corner and the just how difficult it was to set that up and land it correctly. And now you've got Ultra 2, it's quite free to land, you know, you get it from a crouching short. So that was something I always despised, but she's got it now, it's a buff, it's good, right? So anyway, with Arcade Edition, a lot of her stuff has been toned down. Not a lot, I might add. It's actually pretty minor nerfs for Chun. But
well, she got a fair bit of buffs as well. I mean, her normals got significantly better from vanilla to super.
Certain ones. Hmm. Her standing hard kick was actually nerfed.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, one frame startup, one frame recovery, and hitbox same. But you really do not throw it out as much against Zangief, let's say. But her normals did get better, and downfall to light kick was the real one. In vanilla, it would only juggle in its anti-air situation if it was a counter hit, and air counter hits are a bit different. So you can still land things like downfall to light kick to EX legs or three stomps in vanilla, but it's a guess in a sense that your opponent may or may not have just got the counter hit property. She was given an incredible hitbox on downfall light kick and, you know, some better airborne frame timing in Super. So that juggle was, in my opinion, the main improvement she got besides her pokes getting significantly better, you know. So, yeah, I mean, she's got that, and there's a question on how useful it will be in AE. But the main one that I saw, which was a problem, let me think, was the different change in her level 1 focus property. There's an awkward situation with Chun where, you know, you'll have a focus war in the game and someone will release focus. It may be level 1, it may be level 2, but it's not a level 3. And then Chun will dash forward and often the other person will release or something and Chun will block it. She is safe because of an interesting property with her focus. The direct translation on the change to the focus questions the fact, raises the point that may no longer be there anymore,
yep.
Or something else could change. You know, I am assuming a little bit because it is Capcom and they could be trolling, but that to me is the scariest thing in a sense that I really enjoy that part of Chun's game. So on the whole though, I like Chun's AE edition changes. I didn't like seeing her rise up the tier list and bring it on, you know, take away her downfall light kick, see if I care, you know, just want it to go back to the way it was, but it won't, so just take the improvements and smile, I suppose. I mean, I sat through Vanilla Sagat, I can sit through some Kokoshos.
So with the New Zealand scene, because it's a lot smaller, would you say that your players are a lot more technical and that they rely a lot more on things like frame data because you don't have as much character variety?
Yeah, interesting question. I would say ultimately that does happen. We are forced to get a lot more technical. I'd mainly say because New Zealand scene is not at information spreading stage yet.
Oh, really?
So I come to Australia, right, and I'm just blown away by the fact that you'll be playing someone and they'll be telling you exactly how to counter what they just did. You know, that's cool, but it's very different in New Zealand because our tournaments are smaller, you know? People will still withhold information or not pick their main in casuals because they've got their match coming up, and you can't disagree with that in the sense that they want to do well at their tournaments.
It's very old school style.
It's very old school, you're right. And what happens though is, say someone doesn't want to pick El Fuerte against you in casuals or at all, you don't know how to block Fuerte and you aren't ready for his gimmicks, so you're forced online to, you know, watch streams or look up strategies or frame data, these sorts of things. You're forced to get technical on your own if you can't, you know, be playing every single day. And you're forced to, you know, find out your own stuff. you're forced online, you need to look at, you know, the top players in the world on the streams, you need to go to a forum and, you know, ask how you should counter such and such a thing. But yeah, I'd say that's why New Zealand scene has to be more technical, because I do think that, you know, there are a lot of people who count frames and they have, you know, the iPod, iPhone apps which allow for you to just look up frames on the spot to see, you know, what punishes what and whatnot. Yeah, I'd say it's lack of information and information spreading, and, you know, a real tight-knit arcade scene in one area, like, you know, Box Hill, Melbourne, or, I don't know, just any Japanese arcade, because it's for a block, you know, and a million blocks within a kilometre. So I'd say definitely that's why we have to get more technical.
Why do you think that the information sharing doesn't happen? Is because the communities are not as close, or do you think it's just because people like to win? I mean, obviously people like to win, but, you know, it's like, how can I put this? Yeah, in Melbourne, we do share a fair bit. It is a little bit interesting because in Melbourne, I find that a lot of people do share. Some people actually feel a little bit reserved, and sometimes they don't actually go out and ask the top players for advice and things.
Sure.
There is a bit of that, but predominantly, yeah, we do share a fair bit. So do you guys, like, so if I were to go up to, say, one of your top players and ask something, would he turn me away, or would he just say, go figure it out himself, or you just don't do it, period?
Let's say that's a character-specific question, but it would depend on the player in the top eight.
Mm-hmm.
If you had that player's respect and you asked a question, you know, a very specific question, he'd probably answer you if he knew. Having said that, there are a lot of ego-type characters within the top eight, and I think that your question was a large one, but, you know, the thing which may prevent people from sharing the information could be just size of the community, in a sense that, you know, it is smaller, but also it comes down to a personality thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
If someone doesn't want you to beat them, then they don't have to tell you anything, and that's fine. It's like you say, it's the old school mentality. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I'd say that's why.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people who will also, you know, you'll ask them if you have the confidence, because, like you say, some people are more reserved. I think that's a shy thing, you know, that they may be a little bit timid, but if they have the confidence to come up and ask, it's not to say that, you know, no one's going to say anything. You know, there are people who just, their intentions are pure and they want to help the little guys, the lobies, level up so that they can, you know, be top eight next year, because that's what it's all about, essentially, is leveling up your community so that they can level you up later on. So I think mainly with a divided community, such as, you know, the player who comes from Tauranga every fortnight, which is me, it's a 2-hour drive to get to Auckland and get to my Rambats, and then also, you know, the third strike players from Wellington who have to travel up to Auckland for Nationals, which is a, it's a 7-hour drive, or, you know, 2-hour flight, with their third strike, you know, versus the Auckland third strike, which is far higher level in a sense that they have arcades they can play it with a larger player base. So yeah, I'd say that we will get to the stage that Melbourne is at with, you know, openness and information spreading. It's going to take time though. We're almost there at the moment, in the sense that everyone's just getting a lot closer, you know, and being more friendly in general and toning down the egos, because the egos were very vanilla driven, I'll say.
Oh, I see.
With the emergence of a new community, because vanilla pretty much did rekindle the community within New Zealand on the whole, you know. It was different sites and different forms before that with multiple games, but the egos emerged with the dawn of a new community, let's say, and they're toning it down a bit now, in a sense that it's not like that anymore, you know. People admit that Vanilla Cigar was broken and Vanilla Ryu was stupid, and, you know, reset hunting isn't everything.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd say it's improving onwards and upwards, and yeah, that's bad.
Okay, so you actually money matched one of Melbourne's top Bison players.
I'm still waiting on that match.
Oh, that hasn't happened yet.
I believe money match is soon, or maybe now-ish, and that's when we're going to do the Skeletor versus Somniacs money match.
I see. Okay, so because you haven't done it, you've seen Somniac play today, obviously.
Yeah.
So how do you think, what's your game plan going in?
Game plan going in is probably hold down back a lot, throw some fireballs, maybe force a few jumps.
Okay.
Guess teleport? Well, we'll see how that goes. But yeah, I think maybe if I just slow down my entire game versus Somniacs, perhaps he'll be forced to make a few jumps or a few guesses which he wouldn't have otherwise made. So it'll be interesting to see. But, you know, I have a lot of Bison experience in a sense that I've been playing what I would call and what now is Australia's best Bison player, being Brodster AU or Brody. I'm used to the rush, you know. I'm used to some really fast Bison play. I think Somniacs differs a lot in that aspect, in a sense that it's a bit slower, you know. That's fine. That's playing to win, you know, like you say. We'll see how that goes, but I'm very familiar with playing ranked players, in a sense that I was ranked one in my character for PlayStation Network recently.
Oh, really? Wow.
I was. It was detrimental to my game, though, because I started autopiloting, flowcharting, and losing in New Zealand events because of it. So as soon as I made that grind to rank one Chun-Li on PSN, and then I lost at a tournament, you know, didn't win it or whatever, I was done with ranked, in a sense that I know it's good for learning matchups, but you really don't want to be playing ranked all the time and adapting that into your game. Well, I don't anyway, because it made my Chun incredibly stale. I'd go for the same crouch mid-kick cancel to his Anchu, you know, all week. Wouldn't adapt, you know, just ready for the flowchart. And I don't know, I'm feeling confident in a sense that I've seen a lot of different Bison styles, and yeah, I guess we'll just see how it goes.
Well, that's actually quite interesting. Okay, so one question that Mutton always likes to ask is, where do you look on the screen when you play? Do you look at your character? Do you look at the opponent?
It's funny you should ask that, because I've never actually thought about what I do there is weird, but you're right in the sense that I don't look at Chun-Li at all, because the centering of the screen can tell you whereabouts your character is standing, right? I know where my character is standing through the corner of my eye, not the pupil, so I don't look at Chun really at all. I'm constantly looking at EX meter and also life bar. Just switch it up to check opponents, EX meter, and of course ultra meters as well. But keep your eye on the opponent, really, because you know where your own character is going to be. It's more about what your opponent is doing. You can feel the zoning without setting your pupil on Chun-Li, so you just be ready for whatever they're going to do. Or think about what they're going to try, because ultimately you should know the matchup that well ahead of time. Ultimately, it would be nice to know, you know, every special move the other person could do and what sort of spacing it will give them, and maybe what their best option is when you do such and such a thing. So you've always got to want to be in the other person's head, in a sense that you've got to read players. I do find it's important to look at the opponent's character as well. Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe this explains why I suck so much, because I always look at my own character.
Oh, well,
but I look at my own character from a perspective of that I know where he is on the screen. If I get, because DJ is usually goes, he usually is, his game is the zone and then try to get the knockdown and stuff. His vortex, air quotes. I usually know that they're either on their back or they're either going to be in between that range where I need to sort of do something with them. So I actually prefer to keep my eye on DJ, where my character is, and I sort of keep them in the corner of my eye, like you said, because I'm usually trying to zone, throw fireballs at them. So if they actually come into my perspective, then I usually try to select the right move or option to actually beat out whatever they're coming in with.
I can see what you're saying there. And I mean, I will say though that when I was had only played Chun for a year, I was doing exactly what you're doing with a character who's only come out in Super, you know. So the amount of time it took me to get to that stage with Chun was very long, and you're picking a brand new character who I would say has a tough time in a lot of matchups.
Oh, definitely.
So yeah, I mean, if you asked me 12 months into Chun where I was looking, it was on Chun, because I didn't know her normals well enough, or I had to be looking for the setups. And you know, you get there, but I can definitely see, I wouldn't say that's why, you know, you're losing or anything, you know, because that's exactly what I was doing.
So you said you were the highest ranked champ on PSN.
I was, yeah.
Oh, you were. Okay.
16k in sort of rank one, 500 point lead, and then no more.
Okay. So how do you find New Zealand's online players? And obviously New Zealand's internet. Do you find that it's that you can play against all the islands without any problems, or?
Yeah, good question. It is unfortunate in a sense that our, well, New Zealand is still at Telstra stage, in a sense that our dirt is monopolised by a company called Telecom.
Yep.
Or was, until 2 years ago. So the loop has been unbundled now, and there are a lot of other ISPs coming on board competitively, like Vodafone, etc., etc. However, the problem there is if somebody's on Vodafone and then wants to start a game in, say, Marvel vs. Capcom 2 with someone in Telecom, forgetting UPnP settings within the router, there can sometimes be ISP-specific connection problems. And ultimately, if you want to have the best gaming connection in New Zealand, you have to go through Telecom, because it is the dirt to your house. Not only are changes made quicker, but there are other things which can affect the way your game connects and the way your game plays. And it's the saddest thing, you know, but we do have a lot of problems, in a sense that someone from the North Island can't play someone from the South Island for 2 months. And then after 2 months goes by, no ISP changes, good, connecting again, you know? You and I both have enough technical understanding to maybe think about some reasons why that might be happening, but it's besides the point. In the sense that the internet does divide the player base, you know, or which console you're on, you know, 360 versus PSN. And a lot of people in New Zealand are forced to do online play to either play casually or play competitively. And competitively doesn't have to be ranked, of course, it's just, you know, endless with the best people you can find. So, yeah, we do rely on online to bring the community together quite often, bring the islands together, bring the scenes together, and that's how you make your friends, you know, is online, because that's first and foremost for an outside Auckland player where you find Street Fighter players, you know. Little bit different if you're in, say, Auckland, because there is a small vanilla scene. You wouldn't be forced online. Some of our top players don't play online. But definitely can feel that. Definitely the ranked players and definitely the online players, you know, they're all there, but everyone's doing it. The majority are doing it, but we kind of need to be doing it, in a sense that we don't have the infrastructure yet to not have a separate online community, you know?
Yeah. You mean a separate offline? Well, I suppose you have the offline community, but like a separate online community.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, the offline one is divided, and it's the saddest thing, so, yeah.
So would you say there are more 360 players or PS3? Like, which one's the more popular platform to play Street Fighter?
Initially, it was pretty 50-50 even split. Nowadays, easily Xbox 360.
Okay.
I'd say the game plays better on Xbox 360, and there are more skilled players, New Zealand and Australia, connectable. Because, yeah, our connections to Australia are good.
Largely.
I mean, I can get green bars with Melbourne players.
Nice.
But that's a Telecom thing again, you know. Mm-hmm. Other players struggle.
Okay. So 360 is the dominant one.
360 is definitely the dominant one.
I think that's mainly also thanks to Japan, because when we asked the same question to Tokido, he also said that 360 is the dominant console in Japan. But I'm just wondering, why do you think that is? Do you think it's because the game was developed on 360, or because the game feels faster and is one frame faster or two frames faster?
I think that's a pretty easy one to answer, in a sense that, okay, looking at Tokido's situation, Xbox 360 has no market share in Japan. We're talking on the pie graph of consoles, 1% green and 30% PS3, you know. The hardware for Sony PlayStation is very popular and very good, in a sense that it does more than just Street Fighter. It's the better console, in my opinion.
I agree. It's a superior console of all the ones.
It's a portable media device without being a console, you know. So, the funny thing is, though, Tokido is saying Xbox 360 is more popular. It's not confusing, in a sense that you're right, there is that one frame of hardware lag due to scaling issues, and that's just one minor thing. But also, I'd say the netcode or online experience with Xbox 360 is superior, in a sense that, little known fact about PS3 lobbies, you can have an endless lobby with mics. Two players talking is good. Third person comes in and there is consistent lag, delays, and interference, and it has very little to do with connection, because everyone could talk in a 1v1 environment, fine. But as soon as the third person comes in or unplugs his mic, you know, something like that happens, the voice capability fails, in a sense that it's like an old TeamSpeak server when everyone is talking at once, you know. So, Xbox online experience is superior. Game experience, because, I mean, unfortunately, Street Fighter, you need good hardware, you need the lag-free monitors, you need the sticks, you need everything. It's a technical game. Xbox does it better. And maybe coincidentally Xbox Live is more popular, you know, so it's easy for New Zealanders to find better players, more skilled players, and also less laggy connections for some reason, say with the same people, with the same ISPs on Xbox. So it's not hard to see why anyone would say that Xbox 360 is a superior Super Street Fighter 4.
So do you play, so you have it on both consoles then?
I have two PS3s and I have one Xbox 360 Slim, which has only one game, and that's Super Street Fighter 4.
Same here. I don't have two PS3s, I have one PS3, one 360, 360 Super Street Fighter online.
I have one Lightning Edition PS3, which was the white pink Final Fantasy one, and one 60 gig jailbroken, let's say.
Right.
Yeah, you got it. So that's interesting, that's cool.
So, besides Street Fighter, what other video games do you play, if any?
I come from MMORPGs. Maybe 5 years ago I was big on them, but I found them to be too demanding, you know, too much commitment, too much time required, you know, it's hard to do your job and also play the MMORPG. So what other games do I play? I'll be picking up a lot more fighters in the coming years, I'm sure, with, you know, the saturation of the market, like you say, with all the other ones, you know, I'll give them all a go. But currently, I mean, I wanted to get into StarCraft 2. Coincidentally, there was a region locking issue. I couldn't play with all my friends from overseas.
Yep.
So I'm not really playing that much StarCraft 2. Maybe I will. I'm sure I'll play Diablo 3.
Oh, definitely. That's what I'm looking forward to as well.
Definitely. I mean, everything Blizzard touches seems to turn to gold in a sense that they are that good, you know?
Hey, World of Warcraft turned 6 like 2 months ago. 6 years.
Six years. 6 years? Yeah, that's a solid effort.
Glad I never played it.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, I did for 1 year. That was all it took me to realize that was a detriment, you know? So, yeah, I guess a couple other games, but really don't have much time for anything other than Super Street Fighter 4.
Do you have any other hobbies or interests that you do?
Absolutely, man. I mean, IT is my hobby. IT is my job, my employment. I'm always upskilling in IT. IT is a hobby for me. And on top of that, there's, you know, tennis.
Okay.
I used to be big into tennis in high school, not so much anymore, but I will play tennis my whole life. Soccer not so much anymore, it's not as fun.
Who's your favourite tennis player?
Who's my favourite tennis player? Well,
let's say of the current ATP rankings, and then let's say of all time.
You know, currently I couldn't even pick a favourite, in a sense that it's when I'm watching them, and I'm watching them, it's so technical, you know, I'll like one person one day and then the next day I won't. But all time, I can easily say Andre Agassi, in a sense that I met the guy when he was at his prime.
Wow.
Went on the same lift during one of the, I think it must have been Aussie Opens. I was so young, I might add, I can't even remember what the event was. But I was on the same lift and I was wearing that hat, that's a black hat with a coloured fish.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and he was wearing it and he complimented me on my hat because he was wearing the exact same one. And I was like, oh, dude. So
awesome.
Andre Agassi has been, you know, imprinted into my life in a sense that he's my tennis hero.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's so awesome, man.
Yeah, I like tennis. It's a fun game.
I used to play tennis when I was a bit younger. My parents tried getting me into it, but then I sort of grew up a lot.
Yeah.
And I moved to basketball.
Yeah,
but
true.
I still enjoy watching tennis a lot, and I did follow it for quite a number of years. I'd say that the Agassi-Sampras rivalry. Oh man, I used to love watching that.
Absolutely.
I'd say to me, Sampras just because Sampras was a lot more consistent, and he basically had those almost a decade and a half where he dominated.
Yeah.
Well, Agassi was more up and down, you know, up and down, up and down. He sort of, he was number one for a while, and then he dropped to like, you know, 300 and something, and then he'd go back up.
Yeah.
But then again, Agassi is the only player who did win all four Grand Slams in 1 year.
Exactly. So that sticks with him, you know?
Definitely. But Sampras did hold the most won Grand Slams until Federer took over.
So the rivalry lives on.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I don't know, I'd say Sampras would be my favorite a little bit more. But yeah, I know that mad respect for Agassi, man, and you actually met him. Oh,
that's pretty cool. I love tennis in a sense that not only is it a physical game, it's got the mind games, you know.
Oh, definitely.
The strong or hard, the left or right. So I think that may be something that stuck with me in Street Fighter, you know. I like the mind game side of tennis. Yeah.
Definitely. And you can actually see, like, the people who are a little bit mentally weaker, they tend to be, even the top tennis players, but if they're a little bit mentally weaker, like, oh, who's that Russian guy who rages a lot?
The rage is ugly and everything, yeah.
Yeah, he tends to rage quite hard. It was quite good. He won the Australian Open, I think it was like 2007 against Leighton Hewitt.
Yeah, I know the guy. I know the guy because I've seen him rage, but I can't remember his name.
Well, that guy.
That guy.
He's a very... Marat Safin.
Ah, there we go. There we go.
Safin, he's a really good player. He's very technical. He has his huge serve, has his volleys and so forth. But he gets mentally frustrated very easily.
He does.
And
he lets it affect his game, I find, yeah.
And you know, swinging this back to Street Fighter, you can actually see the momentum of certain matches when the mentally weaker players tend to break.
Yeah.
You know, after a big, like a big ultra miss or... And I should say that, you know, in the final, Hila Gamerby was playing against Takedo when Takedo did the air fireball and Gamerby did his ultra after being demon playing the ultra didn't go into full animation.
Absolutely.
So, and that still didn't actually mentally break him, which shows, you know, that he is very, very mentally strong.
He was ready for any weird situation which may have been thrown at him,
exactly.
be it a demon or be it a bad ultra.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's mental strength is just as important as, you know, execution and other things, I think. But I would almost say in almost majority of any competitive, be it video games, sport.
Totally agree.
Yeah.
Totally agree. And even a bit of a follow on to that, like you say, with the frustration from tennis. I think, you know, also the people who are getting frustrated while losing, because there are so many, unfortunately, I find, people who will not learn from the loss, because let me come out and say, losing is learning in Street Fighting. You've got to lose to actually improve. You've got to lose a lot to actually improve. So I think it's the saddest thing when somebody will, you know, bash the buttons or, you know, actually get mad when losing, because really you should just be playing a game, which is, at face value, enjoyment, you know? So yeah, you can definitely spot those who get frustrated and don't improve, and, you know, maybe just quit the game rather than just play on and take what they can from their losses and whatnot.
Actually, another thing that I find that's very similar between Street Fighter and tennis is similar to Street Fighter, it's you in tennis as well, it's you against the other person, excluding doubles
right.
and team tournaments. It's your skill against their skill.
Absolutely.
It's one-on-one. In other games, like, you know, the team-based games, it's just not the same when it's one-on-one, you know, two human beings going, you know.
Absolutely.
It's just, and that's why I think tennis is also, that and Street Fighter both, their mental strength is really important, because there's nobody else to blame but yourself.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's a big thing. And also, to bring it back to tennis one more time,
yeah.
with the mental strength, let's say one final tennis example, don't have to have the strongest serve, you know, because the stronger the other person plays and hits the ball, the easier your returns are. And that's bizarrely Street Fighter relevant as well, in a sense that if you're sitting back on your turtle and the other person's being the aggressor, you're doing the easy turtle, or, you know, you're not the stronger player, but you can capitalize on the other person's offense or his confidence or his power, you know, like just like in tennis. So yeah, it's interesting. It's a good Street Fighter game as a tennis.
Definitely. Okay, well, that's just about going to do it. Do you have any final thoughts, shout-outs?
Final thoughts, shout-outs, oh, absolutely. Everybody in this country, you know, thank you all for being just who you are, in a sense that you all help and nurture the New Zealand scene, you know. Like, every single one of you who plays Xbox or PSN or organises things or does anything or holds an event as awesome as this, you know, it all helps New Zealand, in a sense that we are sister countries, so to speak. I mean, yeah, we wouldn't be able
you're our small backwards inbred cousin.
Oh, thank you.
Actually, I'm not Australian, so
yeah, you don't even need to play that card, but yeah, I mean, we couldn't even have gotten to the skill level we're at today if not for Australia, you know. And like, we couldn't have aspired to travel overseas if Aussie organisers weren't organising Shadowloon Showdown, you know. So we are so grateful to everybody in Australia, and I've got to give shout outs to absolutely every single Australian, you know, Osido, Shadowloo, Sydney, Melbourne, whoever, because you know, we do owe you guys a lot in that sense, and that, you know, maybe one day we'll get there with, you know, events like this. But
I'll definitely travel out there if you guys had a national.
Awesome. Yeah, nationals are always good, bro. We had Hebby come over for our last one, you know, Heb.
Yeah,
commentator. Yeah, he made the trip over, and I think really he really enjoyed himself. Yeah, but yeah, shout outs to everyone in Australia. Shout outs to NZism, because, you know, that's important too. Flux Core, Alan created NZism in about 2007. It was before Street Fighter 4 anyway. He tried to bring every community together, and that's a big job in a country which has no infrastructure. So shout outs to Alan Flux Core for doing NZism, and then shout outs to everyone that I know and love within the NZism community, because you all know who you are. Shout outs to Gamer B, Mago, and Tokido, because those guys are good.
Damn straight.
Peace out, man.
Thank you very much, and yeah, we'll catch you next time.
Once again, we'd like to thank Scarlator for sitting down and doing the interview with us, and I'd actually like to apologize for constantly mispronouncing his name. I'm sorry, I'm really terrible with names. That's just about going to wrap it up for episode 8 of Don't Be a Scrub podcast. Feel free to leave us comments on any of the websites, forums where you download this podcast from. As always, stay hungry, stay salty, and thank you for listening.